Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Yeah. You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Justin Nimmergood. Justin.
Hello, everyone. Happy Monday. Happy Monday, March 16th. Hopefully, everyone survived Friday the 15th. I know I barely did by the hair on my chinny chin chin. And also, just a quick note out to everyone. Obviously, we're dealing with quite the global pandemic. So, you know, hopefully everyone is taking necessary precautions to stay safe. You know, stay obviously, you know, indoors, not literally, but yeah, indoors or certainly in contained places if you can and where you can. I know just having lots of discussions with some of my clients and partners lately, along with other universities that I work with, it's quite a time right now. I know for my younger brother, his school has been all but shut down for the rest of the year for in-person classes. He'll be continuing and actually finishing his degree online for the remainder of the semester. I know a lot of other universities are following suit. But the point is, you know, everyone, this is a very serious global matter. So please make sure you're taking necessary precautions, washing your hands, you know, and obviously being hygienic, but more so being precautious. It's this is serious. A lot of people are going to be affected. And I think the CDC estimates that, you know, up to half of the population could be impacted by this at some point in time or another. So this is nothing to take lightly. You know, Bruce, I, you know, on that note, it really got me thinking about this week, and we have a lovely guest on that I can't wait for us to introduce here. But before we do, you know, for all you listeners out there, this is really a great time to reinvest back in yourself, right? You know, sports is all but canceled. A lot of the typical television programs are canceled or postponed. Obviously, you know, universities and educational systems are impacted. But what isn't are platforms like this. So podcasts and online learning programs, books, right? So it's interesting that things do come in waves and things do come full circle. I would highly, and I'm sure Bruce would agree with me, now is a perfect time, as perfect as ever, to reinvest in yourself and personal development with podcasts like this. So to that end, I'll hand it back to Bruce. I know he's excited to introduce our outstanding guest for today, which she's just going to absolutely light up the room and light up the airwaves here.
Absolutely. Yeah, with all this time we're going to have on our hands, possibly, right, if with schools and certain establishments being shut down. I know one of the things that I struggle with, not too bad, but a little bit, is it seems like I've purchased $400 in groceries the last 3 days, you know, with water and I did, but yeah, we still, thank goodness I have two offices that contribute to the I have two commercial offices that help with that. But so one thing was just making good food choices, and like, okay, because there's going to be that temptation, right, for me anyway, to eat comfort food and just sit on my tail and not do much. So we'll try to keep our food consumption where it needs to be anyway. So without further ado, we have a great guest on today that we were able to connect through social media, and it's always good to bring on folks in the coaching space, obviously. And she has her coaching practice here in the DFW area, Dallas Fort Worth area, but a very specialized practice. And so I'm so happy to have Julie Elvira on the show with us today. Julie, how's it going?
Hey, how are you, Bruce and Justin? Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm so glad to be here. I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Well, good. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what got you into the coaching space and some of the influences there.
You know, I think that what got me into coaching was actually my divorce. That was several years ago. And I used to work with my ex-husband. He's also a physician. And I used to work with him in the office. I used to do medical aesthetics. We had several medical spa services over there. And, well, I used the medical aesthetics. And then after a lot of years, so we got divorced. And that it was a very hard life event, like as well for a lot of people. But for me, it was very hard. A lot of emotional challenges. And even though I had a lot of family support, I hired a life coach. Somebody told me about life coaching. And for me, I went to the life coach and she taught me a lot of, you know, different tools and different strategies and stuff that I used at that moment, and it really helped me to move forward. So it ignited like a new passion in me. And I just decided to enter the world of coaching. And I was very fascinated for me because I didn't learn all those things before, not even med school, not even medical training, anything. Not even the MBA that I did in healthcare management. And it taught me so many things that I started to use. And, you know, one of them, self-care, which is so important. And it helped me move forward. So I started blogging about, like, promoting health and wellness. And after that, I started writing for several magazines. I still write for one in Miami, Fort Lauderdale. Shout out to Carlos Sanchez, Salud al Día magazine. I write here, Living Well magazine, Spring Houston. They're so awesome, the editors. And I used to write in Puerto Rico for Salud para Ti, which was in shelves. All of them are printed. I have written for Behavioral Health News and some other ones. And it got me also to start promoting health and wellness in YouTube. I started my YouTube channel. A little shout out for my friend Luis Acevedo, because he was the one who told me, Julie, why don't you start doing YouTube videos? And I was like, what? In front of the camera? Oh my gosh, no. So it got me to start with that, and I really love it. And so, you know, I just wanted to, whatever I learned with that life coach, I wanted to share with some other people. I wanted other people to learn it too, because what it worked for me, it can help and work for somebody else. So, so I did that. I started coaching people in health and wellness, like more or less life and weight loss are being certified. And
so it sounds like really the inspiration was you yourself went through coaching yourself. Are you willing to share a couple of things that you said you learned from the coach that you learned some things from your coach that you didn't learn in grad school and this and that and other things. What were some of the, can you talk about maybe a few of the things that you either learned, or were you struggling with some self-limiting beliefs that you had to overcome perhaps, or,
Yes, actually, I struggled a lot with those I'm not good enough things and very self-limiting, because I had, when I was 3 years old, a dog. I was kind of scared of dogs, but at the time I didn't know I was scared of dogs. It was kind of confusing. And a dog jumped on me, and it got me to feel that it was an attack. And it was not an attack, but for me it was an attack. So I got I couldn't talk. I got very anxious and I couldn't talk. I start stuttering.
Right.
Yes. And I was like that for like a year and a half. I had to go to a psychologist, and he was kind of on the holistic area, and he helped me to gain the talking back. And but after that, it's like the damage was done, and you felt like you were not good enough, and you feel like some people, you know, whatever, you didn't want to say anything because you were scared what people were going to say, what people were going to think. So all of that through the years, you know, had got me to, I didn't want to raise my hands in the classroom because I was thinking what people would say. So, you know, through the years, you kind of overcome those things, but you still have them. And then the life coach really, she had some techniques of, for example, self-awareness, that, you know, is very, like the very big thing, and the big step in, the first step in emotional intelligence. So, so that was one thing, that you tap yourself whenever you were feeling kind of that you were not good enough, whenever you had that thinking, then you tap yourself. So there were some things, you know, just little things for behavioral change. And but I have to say that what also gave me tools to put in my toolbox was in the addiction field. Because a couple of years ago, I met a good friend of mine. He has 27 years in recovery from alcohol and substance. And, you know, I start going with him to the AA, NA, and he introduced me to some other people, great people that I know that they're in recovery from substance. I also volunteer in Nexus Treatment Center in Dallas at their recovery coaching area. I volunteer for a long time, and I learned several things from recovery coaching. I got certified in that, and food addictions and interventionists, because I fell in love with the part that a lot of people that they're not in recovery from substance, they don't know that people, when they start recovering from substance, they have all these tools that they learn, that we that are not recovering from substance, we don't have. And in the field, I always say that we're all addicted to something, and we're all in recovery from something. And it helped me so much to learn other tools from there, that from the field, that that helped me a lot with the limiting beliefs and kind of move forward. And I have to say that if I didn't have that combination of things on my toolbox, I couldn't have recovered from, say, in 10 years, I have passed through a divorce that was like 12 years married. And my dad passed away 6 years ago from heart disease. My sister passed away a year ago from complications after a small bowel obstruction surgery. And then my daughter went to college last semester, which is a big thing. It's my only daughter. So in all these years, all these things have happened that, you know, these tools have helped me to slowly recover from all of them, from the grief, from the emptiness thing, from the abandonment feeling, all that stuff. So I really have to thank the coaching and the addiction field for all this.
Do you find yourself being more resilient?
Yes, definitely. And I use these tools with my client, because I, like 3 years ago, I disconnected from everything. Like after my dad passed away, I kept doing videos for 2 or 3 years, but I was not motivated anymore. Mm. Like, I think it was grieving. And so I took a step back and was like, you know, I need to really focus on myself and kind of do a lot of self self-care and kind of get in that groove again slowly, but not, you have to just step back.
Did your life purpose change, or having survived these things, do you think you're doing, what you're doing now is very different than what you thought you'd be doing years ago?
Yes. And my approach is more, it's more on the thinking system. And that's why I created a program. It's called, I put it fine, but it's FINE, because it combines fitness, like, you know, you have to have some physical activity. Fitness, I is for intuitive eating, N is for nutrition, and E is for emotional intelligence. Because most, you know, for me, for example, a weight loss client that, you know, want to lose weight and everything, sometimes it's not really, you're disconnected from yourself, first of all. You have to connect with yourself again in order to know that you're overeating or do your emotional eating, especially as women with these hormone changes and stuff. We do a lot of emotional eating. And I have to say that, well, when I was married, I had my pregnancy. I gained almost 70 pounds during my pregnancy. I lost everything in 6 months. But the hardest part was keeping that weight off for 18 years that my daughter has. And that is what people don't know, how to keep it off. So you go up and then you lose 20 with a keto, whatever, and then gain 20 again, and, you know, slim fast and everything that is out there. So for me, what I teach right now is intuitive eating, because intuitive eating, you don't follow a diet. I don't believe in diets. Diet has the word "die" in it, so I don't really live in it.
I like that. Anything that is morbid like that.
All right, that's the word. Thank you. All right. I'm gonna borrow that one. I never heard that. That's awesome. Word,
no, you know, I heard it from a psychotherapist that she said that one time, and I was like, right, you know, I didn't think about it that way, but definitely,
I resonate with that though, because I think for you know me, as I've gone through my health, you know, trials and tribulations, and certainly, you know, I mean, I would say I'm in pretty good shape, not my best shape right now, but, you know, the intuitive eating makes sense. It makes a lot of logical sense, because your body craves certain things. Some foods are okay, right? But, you know, like I've tried certainly the Atkins and the South Beach and all the, you know, the modified keto and you name it, I've probably tried it. The reality is your body needs certain sustenance in order to not only thrive but to survive at some level. So that's great. So tell us a little bit more about this. What does it entail?
So what I follow is intuitive eating, and I teach it because it had helped me to see when I lost the weight 18 years ago, it was more like not the right way to lose weight. It was not with pills or anything, but it was more like those frozen lean cuisine and the other ones and whatever. And they have so much sodium. And at that time, it was sort of like, okay, I need to lose this weight because I need to go back to my, you know, jeans or whatever. But, and then start exercising and stuff. But I started learning a little bit of how to eat at that time, but not really. It was more, I could keep the weight off, but it was more when I started coaching that I started to learn more about health and wellness. That what I got certified master of health and wellness and life and whatever, and it helped me to start seeing what I was eating, that it was okay to have something and you don't have to feel guilty about having it. That's what also intuitive eating, it's like that. You have to learn your body's cues, because there's physical hunger, there's emotional hunger. So you have to learn to connect with your body again, because we are just so used to being disconnected from our body. That's why we buffer. You know, we use food as a buffer, or mm-hmm. use alcohol, or use sex, I mean, porno, whatever. We use it as a buffer. So food is something that is more society accepted. So we use it as a buffer, especially, you know, refined carbs and all that stuff. What I teach is more like you need to calibrate your body first. Then you go into, okay, learn your thinking. What is it that you're thinking? What is it that you're thinking that is making you? What is it that is making you to feel? And then you go for that. You go for the cookies. There's something that you're thinking that is getting you.
It's like a chain reaction. You have a thought, like then a feeling, and then a behavior, right?
It's like the thoughts, feelings, behavior, actions, and then you get the result. That's how it is. I mean, everything is a thought. Everything starts with a thought. And the thing is that we go for the cookies, and we go for the chips, and we go for different things. And it doesn't matter if you're happy or you're sad, because you go whatever. You go when you're happy, you're feeling really good, and then you go when you're sad, and you're feeling really bad. Mm-hmm. So when I was passing through my divorce, I was starting to eat ice cream, and I didn't know why I started to eat ice cream, but it felt good. Right. But it didn't feel good. It just felt good at that moment. And then afterwards, you go like, oh my gosh, why did I eat that?
Some guilt.
Yeah, the guilt part after. So intuitive eating teaches you not to be guilt after you eat something. It's more like a choice that you make of eating something.
But if you make the right choice, you won't feel guilty.
No, because you learn how to fuel your body with essential nutrients. Okay, it's not that we're going to eat all this bread.
And nutritious value that'll fill you up, right? So glycemic index being like your vegetables and your you know, your other, like your beans, and
so you'll eat stuff that you won't have the urge.
I mean, is that what I understand?
I mean, it's more like it's a choice that you make. For example, if you make a journal, like a lot of people do the food journal, right? And there's some clients of mine that they don't like to do it. Oh, the food journal, right? But well, it's better to do it and put everything in it. It doesn't matter what you eat. You put everything in it. And then we go in and we go like, okay, so you ate this at this time and everything. And that's fine. Not feeling guilty after. Because if you ask somebody to do a food journal, they will not gonna put the junk food. Because you go like, oh, no, because, you know, this is junk food, so I'm not going to put it because I want to show all the good things that I ate. No, it's like you look at it and you go like, what was I doing at that moment that I ate that? And what was I thinking? Because there's a lot of stress eating, emotional eating. I have had that, you know, in my life. I have had episodes of emotional eating and stress eating, and you go for this and you go for that. And not to the point of binging, but yes, you know, you go for the whole thing of cookies. You know, the whole line of the Oreos.
Yeah, I did a whole line today. Well, and I'll tell you, so the cookies is particularly relevant right now because yesterday Mama Nimmergood made about, she made homemade cookies.
Toll House.
Oh, my goodness. She made.
You should have brought some in, man.
Because I knew we were going to be talking about
but it's okay.
I didn't want to tempt us. Okay.
We could have tempted our guest. We could have derailed our guest and tempted her.
We could have been a bad influence on her.
Exactly. That's nice, man. Well, I'm getting some vicarious pleasure hearing that. But anyway.
But, you know, the thing is that, I mean, you could have bring the cookies and we can eat the cookies. That's the thing. It doesn't matter if you eat one, two, or three cookies, but then after, it's okay. I have some cookies. So that way you don't deprive yourself and restrict yourself from eating everything.
So it's just, I have a question then. So it, would you say that this might be a logical approach then would be for intuitive eating would be you almost go into your eating habit or session or whatever you want to call it. So let's just use the ice cream example.
Episode.
Okay. And I like the ice cream one because you're talking to a guy that for a while was eating a pint of Ben and Jerry's every night. So I love my ice cream. Still do love my ice cream. But I also know that if I eat my ice cream every night, I'm not going to have the physical fitness or the body that I desire, right? That makes me happy and brings me joy and pleasure. So I started something a couple weeks ago, which I had started back, this is going back to 2016 now, when I was probably in the best physical fitness. It's like, you know, success leaves clues, right? We know that as coaches, right? I had a program whereby the week I would always have something at night, you know, like maybe a banana and some peanut butter or something. So it's like that was my sweet, a little treat, but it's not like that heavy fat, like trans saturated fat, you know,
yeah.
Like a Ben and Jerry's ice cream. But then on the weekends, like on Friday and Saturday night, I would treat myself to, you know, a little bowl of or a cup of ice cream or something like that. So I started that about 2 weeks ago now, and I've dropped some weight and I can already see the 8-pack coming back.
There
so
you go.
I'm liking that. But your approach might be a little bit different or is it in line?
I'm curious though how
I want to see the contrast.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about.
Oh, because you're doing that like as a cheat meal?
Like a certain day of the week.
Like people do sometimes.
Thing, no?
It's more of a I enjoy ice cream, but I also want to have the discipline to have the body I desire, the physical fitness mm-hmm. I desire. So
well, see, we look at the goals too, right? What are the results that you want? Okay, so whenever I meet somebody, I don't go into, that's why, yes, I have a program, but it's not one size fits all. It's just the tools, let's practice the tools and go in there. Where are you now and where do you want to get? I mean, how do you want to get there? Oh, no, well, not exactly you, but it's like, how do you want to get there? And where are you now? Okay. So I meet the client where it is right now. Okay. Not okay, we're going to start with this. And, you know, so in your case, then if this is working for you, you might stick with that. Because that's the problem, that people don't stick with the thing.
Yeah.
That's why you heard a lot of people, I did keto for 2 weeks. And then I couldn't take it anymore. And then you don't have that commitment to it because you're so deprived and there's so much restriction that you just some people binge after.
Have you looked into this Noom thing at all?
Noom. I don't know what it is, but it's we use psychology, this and that. Is that
yeah, I think they use the thinking process also, the thoughts and how to, but I haven't really I have seen the ad.
Right.
But, and I have seen some reviews and it's pretty good. It's like an app. Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. But, this situation is like, with intuitive eating, it's more like, you commit more with it because you work a lot on the body image. Mm-hmm. So there's some exercises, you know,
like imagery.
Like, you know, for women, we get a lot of this. You look at yourself in the mirror and it's more
the body dysmorphia.
Body dysmorphic and body image. And I look fat or I want to be like whatever. And, you know, with all this Instagram and whatever. And so yeah, you have to work.
I don't exactly have the truth, I tell you.
So we have to work a lot on that part. But also, it takes a little bit of time to work on the, when I get a client and to work on the, after calibrating the body, which is like getting rid of refined sugars and the carbs and for like 2 or 3 days. Just to for you to know how your body is responding to that, you know, and that's when we do the journal
right.
And you put everything in there. If you cheat, it doesn't matter. It's not the, because there's a guilty part about it.
Now your clients pretty much do this on their own. I mean, you're not using metformin or other types of things. No, it's no medication assist. This is a straight coaching protocol.
Yeah, but it takes a while. I like to have my clients a couple of sessions, maximum 3 to 6 months only, because you have to teach the client, but the client is the one. I like coaching because the client is responsible for the result. You're not responsible for it. So if you don't do your homework and if you don't do the things that I tell you, you know, like I'm suggesting these, that, and do a lot of homework, so you're not going to see any result. You're not going to learn. So I like coaching because of that. The client is responsible, not me.
There's individual accountability for the outcome. It's not like certain practices where it is relying on maybe a doctor or PhD level individual to make an evaluation, proper evaluation, right? Mm-hmm. Although we kind of are, I would say in a way we're like quasi doctors, right? We are making evaluations and on the fly snap judgments to the clients that we work with. But to your point, which was a great one, you know, ultimately everyone's success is their own. And that I would say would go even when working with a doctor or seeing a doctor. I mean, if the doctor prescribes you for a certain pill, it's up to you whether you take
that. You have to be compliant to the suggestion.
Exactly. Exactly.
If not, you're not going to see results. I mean, if you go to the doctor, right, you prescribe something. If you don't take it, well, it's your own responsibility to take it. In this case, it's more a lot of mental work.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of mental work. And yeah.
Well, let's talk about, you have a specific or fairly specific niche of client that you work with a lot. And you want to talk a little bit about that area of your practice that's, you know, kind of catered to certain types of folks.
So I used to see several professions or stay-at-home moms. But just a few months ago, when I decided to start kind of posting on social media and kind of get there again, mm-hmm. I decided to change the niche into more for physicians, for colleague physicians, because there's a lot of situation right now, and it's a health crisis right now. The situation of this, and I'm gonna say that the word they use, the generic word, is burnout, which is not exactly for the profession, because colleague physicians, you know, they're not burnt out. They, it's exhaustion, yes, and everything, but the word burnt out doesn't really relate. That's the word that everybody's using, but it's not, there's a lot of changes in healthcare system. So the system, the EHRs, all that, and how it's changing from fee-for-service to value-based system and everything, that it's making also the situation more difficult to see patients. And you have to engage more with the patient in order to have more patients, more loyalty, and you know, have a volume there. But the word burnout, like right now they're linking burnout with, okay, so if you do yoga, then you're not going to be burned out. It's not that way with the profession, because the thing is this, everybody thinks that a physician, it's a superhuman.
Right.
Yes. And with the high ego, superhuman, and you have to be perfect. You can't do mistakes. And that is very hard on a human being. And yes, we took this oath. And yes, I'm not practicing right now. I'm just coaching, but you have to know that it's not the same to coach a physician than it's coaching somebody else in another profession, because you have to be in those shoes. You have to know that, you know, you can be 5-6 hours in a surgery without eating, without this, that. Then you go and see some other thing. Then you go to another hospital and see some other patients. Then you are involved in this. And then people think that you're superhuman. You can't do mistakes. You can't, you know, at some point you're going to be exhausted. Plus the fact that you have all these inbox messages in the inbox with the EHR. And then you have to take care of that too. And it's a little bit different because people are expecting a lot from you. You are this, you know, big thing, and people are expecting too much. And if you do a mistake, it just goes to the bottom. That's why there's so many physician suicides.
Are there any types of patterns that you see over and over again with physician eating that's gone awry?
Yeah, there's a lot of stress eating and emotional eating. There's a lot of that. There's really a lot of that. Especially sometimes you don't have time to eat, and then you it's some other things or go into some other unhealthy behaviors, really. That includes includes not just emotional eating, but includes alcohol and drugs and some other things. And then the point is that you start doing those things, getting more disconnected from your body. And then you go to the office, the patients are going to feel that. The staff feels that too. And then you're not engaged. That's why they're doing a lot of programs now. Well, not a lot, but they're doing some programs in hospitals and try to do more physician engagement for the physician to have a word in the things of the hospital, the strategies that they're going to use, everything, because a physician is, you know, it's what to keep the hospital moving. It's the one who see the patients. And sometimes it's just under consider. And yeah, but it affects, yes, you can do yoga and yes, but there's a lot of self-care that you need to do and everything. But it's more than self-care. It's you have to connect yourself again with your body. And so when I see a colleague physician, which I started just a few months ago, so I don't have a lot of clients, physicians right now, just a few. But the ones that I have seen, it's very, I have to create a very safe space to decompress and just vomit that baggage that you have. Mm-hmm. And then feel safe, because we physicians, we are very analytical, kind of researchers, analytical. And at first it's like, you know, is this going to work? I don't know what this. Since I've been in the same shoes and know the training and everything, and I also was married to a cosmetic surgeon, you have to make that safe space for that person to feel more connected to you and, okay, so what's going on?
Right. And then with your background, you can resonate with them, or you can certainly empathize with them because you've been in similar backgrounds and had to go through the training and residencies and this and that, and also live the lifestyle of, you know what I mean, as well as, like you said, being the spouse of a physician as well.
It might have been more valuable, in my opinion, than actually being a physician, being a physician. And what I mean, you know, if we think about Johari's window, right, and blind spots, you don't know what you don't know. And, you know, that's where coaching is so, you know, perfect for someone like a physician. In this case, you know, coaching from someone that maybe wasn't necessarily a physician themselves, but also had the practical knowledge and experience and exposure of a day in the life of a physician, where, you know, I'm sure you had enough background and experience to shed light or to use metaphors or to use storytelling to really win your way into their heart and earn their trust. Because when you talk about safe space, that's kind of core to that, right? When you're building rapport up front with them. That's interesting, though. Something that I personally wouldn't expect. I'm curious, and you might not have the answer. Don't feel like you have to answer it. But do you happen to know, or just rough guess? Is there a because we're talking pandemics with the coronavirus? You know, if you were to estimate, or based on maybe knowledge from when you were married, you know, before, any idea as to what percentage of the physician population is affected by this?
Appropriate eating.
Yeah. So, I guess emotional eating or whatnot.
I don't know the like a percent.
What's your intuition?
What's your intuition on intuitive?
But I think that probably an 80% of the physician population has stress eating, emotional eating, and then some other unhealthy behaviors. And I think it's not exactly the person, but the system has changed in these few years, and it had messed things up. And it's not the same. It's practicing medicine right now is not the same as before. So our physicians, they need, see, the thing is that you are supposed to be superhuman, so it's very hard to ask for help.
Right.
So you have to really connect in order to, because you're supposed to resolve your things yourself.
Physician, heal thyself.
Well, that's a tough one, right? I mean, I sort of empathize with that community because they're the, you know, some of the most highly educated people on the planet. I mean, outside of, if you wanted to talk more specific, you know, neurosurgeons and whatnot, but they're all, I would say, under the doctor umbrella. That's tough, right? You're expected to be this leader, an expert in society. And then when you ask for help, maybe, you know, it's seen, you know, I don't know, not seen.
I'm weak or it's embarrassing.
Yeah. I would equate that to, you know, like a man that proclaims domestic violence of their spouse, right? That's sort of like a social faux pas. You just don't hear about that every day. You know, you don't see it, you don't hear about it, but I'm sure it's going on more prevalently than we even think about or know in society today.
Yeah, and you know, there's a little difference when you have a woman physician and a male physician. Usually, not usually, right, but a male physician, a male doctor, a lot of male doctors are married or they have, you know, so they have all this going the day and all that stuff and then go home and there's somebody there that is going to have your food and is going to have, you know, your different things and for you and everything is already done. For the woman doctor, it's kind of different because you are engaging with your patients all day. You are doing all that. Usually women doctors, they tend to connect more with patients, I guess, because of our
nurturing nature,
natural engaging maternal thing. So we connect with the patients. So this women doctor, so you connect with the patients all day. Sometimes you go over the regular hours and you go and have to meet with families, have to meet with caregivers, have to meet with other, you know, family members and everything. Then you go home. You are already exhausted. You don't have much of more to give. Then you go home and then you have to make food and then you have to attend your husband if you have a husband, the kids and everything. Yeah. So it's a lot, you know. Yeah. It's a lot.
There's more, yeah, more roles.
A lot for any working woman, especially. I mean, not especially. I would say it's a lot for any working woman, right?
Sure.
If you think about societal roles, and then if you want to go into the biblical roles, which we won't go into too much on this particular podcast, but I mean, it is a lot for, I would imagine, for any woman to be able to pivot between those roles, to, you know, do it on the fly, to be able to fill all those roles naturally and authentically, and successfully. Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, but also, you know, there's a thing right now with the pay gap thing that also affect, yeah, the pay gap also affect the physician women population with the pay gap. It's not the same. It's not the same. A male doctor, what he earns, and the same profession, the same specialty and everything, it's not the same as a woman doctor. So that's there's a pay gap too.
There is. Well, I know we got less than 5 minutes. Tell us just a minute or two about the setting. Do you do telephone coaching? Do you do office visits? Do you meet people? What are some of the modalities that you engage with your clients?
I do, if it's local, I can do visit, or we can meet somewhere, but usually I go to the office or something and then we'll meet. But if it's not in the Dallas area, then it's Zoom or FaceTime or WhatsApp, or usually Zoom. Yeah, and then we can do online coaching, which is pretty cool because I have clients in different places, Florida, Puerto Rico. Yeah.
And that's just going to be the trend. I mean, telemedicine and telehealth and telecoaching. I mean, that's where we're headed. I mean, the writing is on the wall with some of these. You want to talk about how they made it hard for physicians to practice. Anybody, it's going to be hard for people to practice in a face-to-face format, no matter what your discipline. I think it's all going to go sooner or later. Most of it's going to go, except for a hospital ER visit, right, or surgery. But anyway, so but embracing, like you said, embracing WhatsApp and embracing video, you know, coaching is good.
It is good on the physician part. You want the physician to come to you face to face and say, how are you doing? That bedside manner is very important.
Right, and that's part of the healing and the change process is having that. I think having that face to face connection makes, to me, I know it makes all the difference in the world. Well, tell our listeners how they can connect with you. Do you have a website or a Facebook page? How would you like folks that are interested in your work that want to connect with you? What are the ways that folks can connect with you?
Yes, Bruce. I have a website. It's coachdrjulie.com. It's coach, C-O-A-C-H. Doctor is D-R-J-U-L-I-E.com. And they can find me on all social media as Coach Dr. Julie. And my YouTube channel is also Coach Dr. Julie. Let's see. I'm going to start posting new videos at the end of March or probably beginning of April, because I'm into other things too right now. I just got to be Alzheimer's ambassador for Alzheimer's Association. Thank you. So that's some other thing that I follow the cause of Alzheimer's.
Well, good. Well, great. Well, thanks for coming on the show with us today. Fantastic, you know, to hear what you're doing and that, you know, making an impact, and you're just going to make such a great impact on your clients, and you know, what you do is so important. A very core part of ourself. I mean, food is a primary reinforcer. It's not like anything else. So we have to learn how to, you know, negotiate and manage and do that appropriately. So again, thank you for coming on the show. Pleasure.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Bruce and Justin, for having me on the show. I really had a great time.
Okay, thank you. So, folks, you can see us at our social media, the Concierge Coaches, on LinkedIn, on Facebook, and Instagram. I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And, Justin, how can folks reach you?
They can reach me through numergood.com. There's some pre-qualification questionnaires out there. Fill them out and connect with me, and I look forward to connecting with you further to help you achieve your goals.
Awesome. So with that, we'll bid everybody a great week. Stay safe. Keep your social distance. Stay productive. And we'll see everybody next week here on the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.